It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week, I chat with Green Party co-leader James Shaw on what a Level 2 might look like, depending on the Prime Minister's announcement today at 4pm. We also speak on students being charged costs and rent for empty student accommodation and the Pastoral Care Act. We also touch briefly on James's response to the memo sent out by the Prime Minister's office, which coincided with a document dump by the government on Friday afternoon. And we also speak on the Waste Minimisation Fund. First off, I begin by asking James what he's most looking forward to post alert level 3.
Well, I would imagine I'm probably going to book a haircut, assuming that my hairdresser is able to operate safely. So, there are some restrictions still in place, right? And they've got to be able to demonstrate that they can operate with a sort of maximum degree of safety. So, for me, that's sort of top of my list.
You haven't done the quarantine haircuts, given yourself a fringe?
No. Well, I did. I took my beard trimmer to the sort of my sideburns because they were just getting a little out of control, and that's managed to, you know, stave things off for a few weeks. But
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some pretty shaggy people around at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really just all natural, right? Grow it out.
Oh, it's like, welcome back to the 70s.
Exactly, great. Maybe this is new fashion trend, but yeah.
Could be.
All right. Well,
pandemic fashion.
Yeah, I really...
Pandemic couture.
Yeah, very high fashion, I think. Great, well, I think, yeah, today I'll just begin on what kind of restrictions are we going to see lifted possibly this afternoon? I guess that's all dependent, but yes.
It is dependent. So, the government has to be confident that there's no community transmission at all and that the disease is contained, because we actually do still have COVID-19 in New Zealand. And I know, I think that there's just over 100 active cases still, and we're still getting a couple new cases every day. They are contained in clusters, so, we're feeling pretty confident about containing it. But because it does still exist in the country, we just still need to play it safe. So that's why the PM, talked about what level 2 is going to look like. And obviously Cabinet will make its decision today, and there may be a sort of a phased, kind of roll of things over the next week or two. But we'll just have to wait and see what the Cabinet decision is.
Yeah. What kind of things are the Cabinet weighing up, I guess, at this point? Because we've got questions around contact tracing, we've got questions around our borders.
Oh, well, look, I mean, I think the borders will obviously remain closed for some time to come, because it is clearly still utterly rampant in the rest of the world. And so if we are successful in stamping it out inside New Zealand, we can't risk the entry of it into the country. And so that'll remain in place for the foreseeable future. But under level 2, as the PM outlined last week, you will see changes in the way that we can get around town and go to work and all that kind of stuff. So we'll actually be able to, we won't have to order everything off the internet. We'll actually be able to go into local stores, schools and universities and polytechs and early learning centres will open, and we'll be able to travel between regions again, be able to connect with friends and family again. We'll be able to go back to a sort of regular recreation activities. So, all of those kinds of things. But there will still be some constraints on how many people in any one place at one time, to try and minimise, either physical contact or, the risk of people coughing on each other, that kind of thing. We're not out of the woods yet, and we need to continue to play it safe.
Yeah, I think a lot of the concern is we've still got a few cases here and there every other day. And so
Yes. Are
we, if we were to move into level 2, are we rushing into things before systems are ready, before we have a proper perhaps contract tracing procedure set up?
Well, I think the whole point of the decision today is that we will move if we feel confident that we're not going to dramatically increase the risk that you'll recreate a situation where you can get community transmission. And that was the concern, of course, that we had, that took us quite rapidly from level 2 to level 3 and then into the national state of emergency and the lockdown at level 4, was it was just clear that we were going from a very, very small number of cases to a very, very big one in a very short period of time. We're on that kind of exponential J curve, and it was important for us to kind of cut that off at the knees. It looks like we have successfully done that, but because the virus is still out there and because there are still people who are picking it up even now after we've come out of level four, you know, there is that risk still exists.
And what support are given to vulnerable groups as we move down the alert levels, who you know might prefer to still stay indoors, still be self-isolating?
Well, all of those government support programs are still there. And, you know, once again, as I did a couple of weeks ago, I would just direct people, if you're unsure, go to the covid19.govt.nz website, because it does contain all of the information. It kind of depends a little on, you know, when you talk about vulnerable groups, on who you are. So there's a difference, for example, if you're, an older person versus someone who's immunosuppressed and would normally be working versus someone who's older and, normally wouldn't be working. How you manage that is sort of slightly different, but always, always, always apply the precautionary principle. And the government has put in place to support people, but particularly people who would normally be going to work, to ensure that they don't have to. I mean, here in Parliament, for example, what we know is that if we do move down to level two, we won't be bringing everyone back to the office. We'll still only be at about 50% capacity, and that's to just try and minimise the amount of contact that you could have with potential chains of transmission and, groups of us gathering in open plan offices and all of that kind of stuff. So it's not a free-for-all. It's not like it's all over when we move to level two.
You talked about schools opening up again, and so we've had, for example, high schoolers, preschoolers, primary schoolers, that being out of school for 7 weeks now. And so what kind of support has been given to, a lot of parents might be still quite worried about sending their kids back to school?
Yeah, I mean, I would advise them to talk to their school about how they're going to manage that, because I think that we probably will see cases of that around the country. One thing, of course, that we have done really well, I think, for the most part — I know some people have fallen through the cracks — but for the most part, making sure that every child in the country is able to do distance education. And so that may still be a possibility for parents who are anxious about sending their kids back to school. But honestly, we wouldn't be reopening the schools if we weren't feeling pretty confident that wasn't going to reopen new avenues for community transmission.
Also wanted to touch on kind of tertiary students today, about student accommodation. So we've seen students being charged for empty rooms from student accommodation at the moment. I know that Chloe Sorbeck has been doing a bit of work on this, so I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on what the Green Party stance is on this, what the situation is.
Well, I mean, frankly, it's a pretty outrageous story. Four out of our eight universities around the country are not charging students who are unable to utilise their rooms, but then four out of the eight do continue. I know that in one of the universities, students got an email saying, look, the university doesn't own its accommodation, it's a private provider, but it's pretty outrageous that private provider has both been charging students for unoccupied rooms and at the same time receiving nearly $1 million in wage subsidies from the government so that it can continue operating. And at the same time, that same operator has a number of its fixed costs, like body corporate fees and insurance and rates and maintenance and marketing, actually all paid for by that university. So I think that, the university, given how generous it's been to that company and how generous the government has been to that company, should apply a bit of pressure and say, hey, look, it's not on. You can't be charging for a service that students are unable to use.
I'm wondering whether this incident has kind of shown that there aren't that many protections or procedures actually in place to protect student accommodations.
It does, yeah. I mean, this is sort of one of the things that this whole thing has highlighted, which is that student accommodation isn't covered by the usual consumer protections and by the tenancy tribunal. And so the only recourse at the moment that students have is to the pastoral care code that, coincidentally, our government just introduced about 6 months ago. It's kind of lucky that we did that, otherwise there would be precisely zero in place other than the management of the university. I do think it's a really, really unfortunate situation, and I do hope that we're able to clean it up over the coming weeks and months.
Are we going to see any reforms to the Pastoral Care Act? Because is that adequate enough to...
I couldn't comment. I just don't know. So that's the domain of the Minister of Education, Chris Hipkins. And I know it's something that he's aware of, in part because Chloe's been in his ear about it for some time. So I'll just have to... we'll just have to wait and see. I know it's on the list of things that we've got to handle, but it's quite a long list at the moment.
And again, maybe something that I asked Chris Hipkins about, but we've also seen unis asking for pay cuts, and specifically Auckland has been asking for some staff to work for free during some areas of the tertiary education sector. So is that something you have knowledge of, or is that something I should maybe ask the education minister about?
Yeah, I would, but also, I mean, the way that, I mean, my response would be the same there as it is to any business, which is that, you know, there is significant government support available in the form of the wage subsidy scheme and so on, and we should make absolutely sure that organisations that have seen their revenue take a big hit, that they are taking all measures to make sure that people stay connected to their work. But we know that, you know, universities have seen a big dip in their revenue from the loss of the international student market, although I think that that'll return in time. But there are businesses all over the country that are in incredibly dire straits, and, you know, even with the support that the government's put on the table, are either unable to continue operating or having to pare back their operations, and that includes the loss of quite a lot of jobs. Mm-hmm. So it is something the government is worried about in general, is, you know, the spike in unemployment that we're going to see over the course of the coming weeks and months, and that's something that we're going to be addressing in the budget coming up this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am aware that some students who are casual workers, so for example, who might work at the university gym, aren't being paid during this time. So,
yeah,
is the wage subsidy adequately covering everyone across?
It should. Yeah. That's right. It was designed to support not just people in kind of full-time permanent jobs, but part-timers, casual workers, freelancers, you know, people who work in the gig economy. I mean, it was deliberately set up to say that, you know, that it was available to the broadest range of organisations. And so if there is, for example, a university gym or a cafeteria that's been unable to operate over the past sort of 6 weeks or so, then they should have been able to use the wage subsidy and pass it through to their employees.
Yeah.
If they haven't, then, you know, take it up with management.
In a slightly different note as well, I know that there was a pretty significant document dump that happened on Friday, and you've come out as saying that you stand by the gag order that was issued by the Prime Minister. I was wondering if you could, yes.
Well, I don't think she personally ordered
it. No,
but, yeah.
that's true.
It came
true.
From Prime Minister's office.
Yeah, so. Prime Minister's office, yeah. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on why you stand by that, because I was just having a quick read through, and there's been some criticisms that it doesn't show the transparency and the communication of the current government.
Oh, well, look, I mean, the reason I said I was fine with it is because we are in a state of national crisis, and it is really important for the government to speak with one voice. And so, you know, that voice is the Prime Minister, has been the Prime Minister, and it kind of makes sense to me that that we stick with that. So I don't have a particular problem with that, and it's not really kind of any different from any other government during a time of crisis.
Okay. Finally, today I wanted to talk a bit quickly on the 2020 Waste Minimisation Fund that was put out as also a possibility for more green jobs. Obviously, we're in a position where a lot of people are losing their jobs, so I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on that.
That's right. So the Waste Minimisation Fund has been in existence since 2008, and during what it does is it takes fees from landfill levy and redistributes it to organisations and companies that are kind of either taking waste out of the waste stream or repurposing it or processing it in kind of new and innovative ways. And about $300 million of landfill revenue has gone into something like 200 projects around the country over the course of the last 12 years. So there, every year there's a funding round, and this round opened up on the 1st of May, and it means that up to $8 million will be available for companies or organisations that are helping to get rid of waste in New Zealand. It is really good because we know in the waste reprocessing and waste management industries, it's actually quite jobs intensive. It's not, you know, there is some automation and roboticization, but actually it's one of those things that requires humans to kind of get done effectively. And so it does mean that there will be opportunities for the creation of more jobs as a result of it. And we're actually adding that into a criteria with this funding round, is that the projects who are applying have to demonstrate how their projects will create new additional jobs.
That was Green Party co-leader James Shaw. And yeah, we saw thousands of pages released on Friday on the government's response to COVID-19, which also coincided with the timing of a memo from the Prime Minister's office in regards to ministers to dismiss any questions regarding the government's response and to not speak on individual portfolios without having it signed off. Obviously, this raises some questions around accountability and the ability for the public, for journalists to question the government on their response. So I think there are some questions around that. Also, in regards to the phrasing of the Pastoral Act being coincidentally being introduced 6 months ago, to just remind that this only came about from the outrage from a death of a student in student accommodation who was not checked upon for weeks. And so it's I understand there's obviously a lot of things going on at the moment, but it is concerning that student well-being seems to almost often slip to the bottom of the priority list. And so hopefully we do see some changes to the Pastoral Care Act and some more protection set in place for students. And also, if you are a casual worker at the university or a casual worker who finds yourself not being covered by the Wage Subsidy Act, do get in contact with us at BFM. And yeah, it's something that I definitely will be looking into, because I've had spoken to a few people who found themselves not being eligible for the wage subsidy. We'll be back after a quick break.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.